Warhead.
Gaia, I'm starting to stink like a Texas gaudy whore at 3 in the morning. Gotta face it, Ryan, we're stuck here. We have to start paddling this clumsy mother to that beach.
She shaded her eyes with her hand, irritably pushing back the long hair that seemed to want to press against her face. Far ahead, just a blur on the horizon, her keen sight could make out something strange. It looked as if the land were creeping in, almost meeting in the middle. She couldn't make out whether there was a gap there or not.
Should be the plainest of sailing out yonder. Nothing beyond the narrows. If there'd been an offshore wind, I feared a little that we might be carried the whole way to France.
By now, they were all standing together in the center of the raft. During the time they'd been on their makeshift craft, they'd all learned caution, finding that a sudden movement to one side or the other would make it appallingly unstable.
Lift me, lover.
What? Why to... Oh, I get it. Give you height to look ahead.
Right. Bend down.
Ryan stooped, dipping his head. Christy, helped by JB, swung a leg over his back and settled herself astride his neck, tightening her thighs. She tucked her legs under his arms, locking her boots in the middle of his back.
Now.
Though the girl weighed in at a muscular 150 pounds, Ryan lifted her in the air without any noticeable effort. He steadied her with his hands on her legs and balanced himself against the pitching of the raft.
Try and... Yeah, that's...
Christy then fell silent. Eventually, she tapped Ryan on the head as a sign to let her down again.
What do you see?
Nothing good, I'm afraid. Looks like there's been some bastard great upheaval that's blocked off most of the water. Brought up the floor of the ocean back in the long winter. This isn't open sea anymore, Doc.
What? You mean it's a kind of lake? No way past for us?
Can't see it. Look at the water around us now. It hardly moves. And has a kind of skin on top, like a sort of scum.
Christy was singing quietly to herself, her pure voice the only sound in the stillness.
A maid again, I ne'er will be, till peaches grow on a cherry tree.
Doc smiled across at her.
I haven't heard that tune in, I guess, a couple of 100 years. There's a damned odd thought. It's lovely. You learned that from your kin back in... What was the ville called?
Harmony. Herb Lanning, the blacksmith, knew lots of real old songs, way pre-chill. It was his son, Carl, who plucked my cherry. That's when I learned the words.
Must have been a very nice ville.
Yeah, it was. But all things change. That was why we were moving on. Was your ville a good place, lover?
Seemed so then, until I saw the skull that was hidden under the smiles.
Life's a deal of hard traveling.
JB surprised everyone with that remark. Homespun philosophy wasn't normally what you heard from the armorer. Jack and Lori were working with the stern steering oar, slowly propelling the raft toward the western shore, now only a couple of miles away. It was backbreaking, soul-destroying work, and they'd found from painful experience that it could only be done in pairs. Any more, and chaos followed, with everyone knocking and pushing into everyone else. It took them close to 4 hours to move roughly half the distance they needed to reach the land. The waters around them had gotten more and more polluted. Dead fish and birds hung suspended, rotting and half-eaten, bones coated with yellow grease. An hour back, they pulled past the corpse of a massive shark, a great white, at least 50 feet from porcine snout to the mangled tip of its tail. It hadn't been dead long, and its flat little eyes still rolled in curiously toward the rich violet sky.
Jaws.
Doc seemed to mean something specific by that remark, but no one noticed. The beach, sand dunes rolling back toward a line of low scrub, was now less than a half mile off. The sun had sunk well behind the hazy bulk of the land. In the last quarter mile, they'd finally broken clear of the stickiest of the watery dreck, but the bitter labor had taken its toll. Doc Tanner had collapsed, muttering feverishly about painted ships and painted oceans. Lori had fainted 15 minutes later, slumping on the timbers, banging her head again. Despite her reserves of moody strength, Christy had given up, sitting down in a heap, her face white and drained.
Oh, sorry, folks. I'm all used up, got no more. Sorry.
It had been left to Jack Lauren, with seemingly bottomless reserves of stamina in his slight body, JB and Ryan to keep working on the clumsy steering paddle, heaving it backward and forward, each stroke making the muscles of shoulder and spine scream in protest. Each stroke pushed the raft a scant couple of feet nearer to land. Now the worst was over. Lori, Doc, and Christy had recovered a little, relishing the cooler breeze coming off the beach. Jack and the armorer were at the oar. Christy smiled weakly at Ryan as they sat together.
I felt awful about stopping.
Don't worry about it.
Could have used the power of the Earth, Mother, but...
No. I've seen you after you've done that. Not worth it. Only about another half hour when we get off this bastard raft.
You know we were talking about Harmony? And your old Ville?
Front Royal?
Yeah. If we get there, and you kick Harvey Cawdor's ass out of the land, what happens then?
Do I get to be the Baron? Take over the line? Is that what you mean?
Of course. Would you take it on? Give up all these Mat-Trans jumps? Give up all the killing? Settle? That's why I left Harmony in the first place.
Ryan looked around them before answering.
We've talked about this before. I don't know, lover. That's the fucking truth. I just don't know.
Hey, Ryan! You wanna spell me?
Right, JB. 1 minute.
Answer me, lover. I want to know what I'm getting into when we get down to the Shens in your Ville.
The jagged cut the Muti had inflicted on Ryan's hand seemed to be healing. He picked at a small piece of rough skin around it, trying to sort out how he wanted to answer Christie's question.
A Baron holds his Ville by weapons and fear. That's always been the way of it. I don't know if that's the way I want to live, Christy.
It can change.
When you're the Baron, you can never turn your back. I was old enough and saw enough before I left Front Royal to know that. You never sit unless you get your back against the wall. You never sleep long and easy. You never trust a smile, Christy. You have too many enemies and no real friends.
With that, he stood up and took the place of JB at the steering oar, leaving Christy Roth with her own thoughts. A half hour later, the raft beached onto the New Jersey shore. The rat count had slipped well away from the dangerous hot spots of the red area, but it still lingered way over into the orange. They left the raft, which had grounded on a mix of sand and shingle. They picked up their backpacks, checking weapons, leaving nothing behind, before striking off inland to camp for the night. Ryan led them only a mile into the dunes, not wanting to risk stumbling in the dusk over some double-poor Muti commune farther from the sea. The evidence of heavy nuking was still to be seen everywhere. There was a great area of sharp-edged glass, twisted and warped into molten lethal shapes. Ryan had never seen anything like it, but the trader had told of seeing patches like it down in the deserts of Vada. It was where missiles had exploded in sand, the unbelievable temperatures fusing the mica into the lake of nuke glass. Nothing grew taller than some stunted alders and willows, their trunks rotting and turning in on themselves. The companions camped for the night in a clearing on top of one of the sand dunes. They could watch for at least a quarter mile in any direction, and not even Christy could hear or see anything. The wind had turned once more, becoming a gentle breeze from the west. JB suggested they not risk a fire, and Ryan agreed with him. It was several degrees above freezing, with a clear sky that held no threat of rain. Christy moaned in her sleep, clutching at Ryan, her body trembling. She was so close against him that her scarlet hair, with its own mutated life, folded its tresses around his neck and upper arms, as though it too sought comfort. In the morning, he asked the woman what her dark dream had been, but she couldn't recall much about it.
I was cold. I remember that. Sitting on a ruined harbor on the edge of a gray sea with slick granite rocks that reached out into the water. I was huddled up without any protection, waiting. I was waiting for something or somebody.
Me?
She shook her head, stippled with the early morning moisture, like tiny pearls amid an ocean of rubies.
No. Not you, lover. Can't. Oh, it was the cold that was the worst.
They started off, moving westward, just after dawn. Until the blurred outline of the sun was nearly overhead, they saw absolutely nothing to indicate any life forms. Ryan was walking point, checking the soft earth for tracks, and finding none, not even any tiny scuttling lizards around the exposed roots of the dwarf bushes.
Where's the nearest town to here? What's the map say, JB?
No map for this part. I recall Washington and Philly were around here. Don't know where. Doc, you got any ideas?
My deepest apologies, my dear Mr. Dix. I fear that I was traveling some byway of my own. Could you repeat the question?
I said, do you know of any towns around here?
The city of brotherly love was... No. We are in a dull area, from my memory. When I was born, I learned in school of a march to the sea. The blue and gray, but towns, I fear not.
Ryan looked at the sky.
No sign of any chem storms. I know we're headed in the right direction. We keep on westward, then south, into the Shens. What kind of nukes they use around here, Doc?
All kinds. High yield, low yield, air burst, water burst, low alt, and high. Some neutron stuff.
Down near Myville, when I was a kid, most roads were passable. Never went that far north or east then. But I'm certainly sure that a lot of the blacktops weren't too wrecked.
That'd be neutron. Takes out life and leaves things standing. The idea was you could come in and take over. Didn't figure on doomsday and everyone gone from everywhere.
During the afternoon, they reached the ruins of a major highway, which blocked their path, coursing like a stone arrow from north to south. A couple of hundred yards to their right was a tumbled sign hanging off its broken support. Jack trotted off, and Christy followed him. They came back together.
What's it say?
Garden State something. Begins with a P and an A, so it might be Parkway. Some roads were called that kind of name. Gaia! Oh, all this dust. Could do with some fresh water.
They crossed the wide six-lane highway and kept moving west. During the next day and a half, they found the land was changing. The bleakness gradually eased away, being replaced by a greener, softer look. The arid sand was covered in clumps of coarse grass that slowly became gentler turf. Here and there, they found small copses of live oak and sycamore, and there were flowers again. Purple orchids jostled among clusters of delicate, starry campions. Huge sundrops overshadowed tiny, arrow-leaved violets. The six walked at a steady pace through fragrant meadows, past streams that ran east toward the sea. They found a fine place to set up camp for the night, near a clean stream that ran through a pool, which was like liquid crystal and fully 10 feet deep with a rock bottom. Trees grew in abundance, but well spread, so that it would be hard for anyone to come at them unseen. Not that they found any sign of human activity since they'd come ashore. For supper, they opened more of the selfies, scraping out the spun soya contents. The fire of tumbled branches was burning brightly, sending a crackling fount of